Oh, hi. I'm re-recording this because what I said earlier didn't make a whole lot of sense when I played it back, at least this intro bit. I overslept because it's a fabulously dreary day out, and I'm a little bit behind and a little more scrambled than normal, as my usual caffeine intake is delayed, and thus so are my cohesive, coherent, cogent thoughts, all of the co-words that come before what thoughts can be. Anyway, let's get into it. Scrooge is still in his old schoolhouse, and his younger sister showed up and is so ready to bring him home for Christmas, reminding him that she loves him very much and that their father has changed and is willing to have young Ebenezer come back into their daily fold of life. A terrible voice in the hall cried, "Bring down Master Scrooge's box there!" And in the hall appeared the schoolmaster himself, who glared on Scrooge with a ferocious condescension and threw him into a dreadful state of mind by shaking hands with him. He then conveyed him and his sister into the veriest old well of a shivering best parlor that was ever seen, where the maps upon the wall and the celestial and terrestrial globes in the windows were waxy with cold. Here he produced a decanter of curiously light wine and a block of curiously heavy cake, and administered installments of those dainties to the young people, at the same time sending out a meager servant to offer a glass of something to the postboy, who answered that he thanked the gentleman, but if it was the same tap as he had tasted before, he had rather not. Master Scrooge's trunk being by this time tied onto the top of the chaise, the children bade the schoolmaster goodbye right willingly, and getting into it, drove gaily down the garden sweep, the quick wheels dashing the hoar frost and snow from off the dark leaves of the evergreens like spray. "Always a delicate creature, whom a breath might have withered," said the ghost. "But she had a large heart."
"So she had," cried Scrooge.
"You're right. I will not gainsay it, spirit. God forbid." "She died a woman," said the ghost, "and had, as I think, children."
"One child," Scrooge returned.
"True," said the ghost. "Your nephew."
Scrooge seemed uneasy in his mind and answered briefly, "Yes." Although they had but that moment left the school behind them, they were now in the busy thoroughfares of a city, where shadowy passengers passed and repassed, where shadowy carts and coaches battled for the way, and all the strife and tumult of a real city were. It was made plain enough by the dressing of the shops that here too it was Christmas time again, but it was evening and the streets were lighted up. The ghost stopped at a certain warehouse door and asked Scrooge if he knew it.
"Know it," said Scrooge. "Was I apprenticed here?"
They went in. At the sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig, sitting behind such a high desk that, if he had been 2 inches taller, he must have knocked his head against the ceiling, Scrooge cried in great excitement,
"Why, it's old Fezziwig! Bless his heart, it's Fezziwig alive again!"
Old Fezziwig laid down his pen and looked up at the clock, which pointed to the hour of 7. He rubbed his hands, adjusted his capacious waistcoat, laughed all over himself from his shoes to his organ of benevolence, and called out in comfortable, oily, rich, fat, jovial voice,
"Yo-ho there, Ebenezer, Dick!"
Scrooge's former self, now a grown young man, came briskly in, accompanied by his fellow prentice.
Dick Wilkins, to be sure, said Scrooge the ghost. Bless me, yes, there he is. He was very much attached to me, was Dick. Oh, poor Dick, dear, dear.
Yo-ho, my boys, said Fezziwig. No more work tonight. Christmas Eve, Dick, Christmas, Ebenezer. Let's have the shutters up, cried old Fezziwig, with a sharp clap of his hands, before a man can say Jack Robinson.
You wouldn't believe how those two fellows went at it. They charged into the street with the shutters. One, two, three. Had 'em up in their places. Four, five, six. Barred 'em and pinned 'em. Seven, eight, nine. And came back before you could have got to 12, panting like racehorses.
Hilly-ho! Cried old Fezziwig, skipping down from the high desk with wonderful agility. Clear away, my lads, and let's have lots of room here.
Hilly-ho, Dick! Chirrup, Ebenezer! Clear away! There was nothing they wouldn't have cleared away, or couldn't have cleared away, with old Fezziwig looking on. It was done in a minute. Every movable was packed off, as if it were dismissed from public life forevermore. The floor was swept and watered, the lamps were trimmed, fuel was heaped upon the fire, and the warehouse was as snug and warm and dry and bright a ballroom as you would desire to see upon a winter's night. In came the fiddler with a music book and went up to the lofty desk and made an orchestra of it and tuned like 50 stomach aches. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast, substantial smile. In came the three Miss Fezziwigs, beaming and lovable. In came the six young followers whose hearts they broke. In came all the young men and women employed in the business. In came the housemaid with her cousin, the baker. In came the cook with her brother's particular friend, the milkman. In came the boy from over the way, who was suspected of not having board enough from his master, trying to hide himself behind the girl from next door, but one, who was proved to have had her ears pulled by her mistress. In they all came, one after another, some shyly, some boldly, some gracefully, some awkwardly, some pushing, some pulling. In they all came, anyhow and everyhow. Away they all went, 20 couple at once. Hands half round and back again the other way, down the middle and up again, round and round in various stages of affectionate grouping. Old top couple always turning up in the wrong place, new top couple starting off again as soon as they got there. All top couples at last, and not a bottom one to help them. When this result was brought about, old Fezziwig, clapping his hands to stop the dance, cried out, "Well done!" And the fiddler plunged his hot face into a pot of porter, especially provided for that purpose. But scorning rest, upon his reappearance, he instantly began again, though there were no dancers yet, as if the other fiddler had been carried home, exhausted, on a shutter, and he were a brand new man resolved to beat him out of sight or perish. And with that, dear friends, I'll leave you in the middle of this raucous Georgian era ballroom celebration. Picture Bridgerton, I'm assuming. Picture around that era. This was written in 1843, and I don't remember what year Bridgerton was in, but it's like Georgian Regency, my assumption. Who knows? I'm not a historian. I just really appreciate Shonda Rhimes' historical fiction and adaptation of Julia Quinn's immortal romance novels. Zero shame in reading romance. It's such a fun time. Especially if you liked your little girly romances as a kid. Yeah, read something warm and cozy for yourself. No shame in genre. Never shame in genre. Yeah, so thank you for listening. Thank you for letting me into your ear holes.
I love you all so much, and once again, I'm grateful you come on this journey with me, and even more grateful you let me send you messages every single weekday. In the new year, this is going to switch to podcast only, so I'll stop doing the push messages, but that doesn't really matter right now. You'll keep getting push messages until the new year. All right, I'm going to get myself that next cup of tea and then start working on some writing work that desperately needs to get done so I can move on with my life. All right, you wonderful people. Thank you again. I love you again. Take good care of your hearts, and I'll read to you again tomorrow. Bye.